Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day. Who among you switched parties in the presidential from 2016 or are voting today and didn't vote at all in 2016 or didn't make up your mind in any race until the last week? If the polls are right, there are many of you in the category of party switchers. The polls say Trump has lost a lot of people and that many are white suburban women. Are you one of them? But we've also heard from some people on this show who are switching the other way, Democratic or third party, or abstain in 2016 and are voting for Trump. You're invited too. Who among you switched parties in the presidential from 2016 or didn't make up your mind in any race until the last week? Or since turnout is so much bigger this year, apparently, who's listening right now, who's voting or voted this year, but sat it out in 2016? As our calls are coming in, Slate political writer Jim Newell is with us. He also writes the weekly politics newsletter called The Surge. Hi, Jim. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Good to talk to you again.
First of all, is there any news this morning that you're keeping your eye on? Anything yet to report?
There is not much news. I am keeping my eye on certain things like some live cast of Florida Election Day numbers, but I wouldn't describe that as a healthy habit. They're not really going to show us anything that useful. You kind of just need to see how the day progresses and how, you know, all the return mail breakdowns by registration turn out. So I would not recommend anyone doing what I'm doing right now, which is obsessing on Twitter over every little piece of data.
Your article out today is seven things to watch for today, and let's just go there. Number one, a Democratic breakthrough. Has the Sun Belt finally arrived? Now, part of me, Jim, says, oh, Jim, they say that every year, but Beto O'Rourke lost, Stacey Abrams lost, et cetera, et cetera. So you ask the question, has the Sun Belt finally arrived? Do you think it has?
You know, I try not to make predictions. I mean, all I can say is the polls show, you know, Arizona and Georgia were both within about 5 points in 2016. They've added a lot of new voters since then, and the polls show it pretty close to tied in both of those states this time. So I think, you know, those states are going to be 1 or 2 points either way. And it's just, we'll find out today if the balance gets tipped. But this is, I think, the future, whether it arrives this cycle or not, this is kind of where the Democratic coalition is heading. They're probably just generally going to keep losing some voters in the Midwest and the North, but they're going to keep adding new voters just with population trends in the South along the Sun Belt for cycles to come. So whether it arrives this cycle or not, we'll see. But I think, you know, couple of presidential elections from now, we're not even going to recognize the electoral maps that we're so used to.
Your thing to watch today, number two, battleground Pennsylvania. And I guess, Jim, if the usual mantra of election watchers, and you've already used the word in our brief conversation, is Florida. Florida, 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 Florida. This year, maybe it's Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania. And you wrote the other day about what you sarcastically, I think, headlined hot pollster on pollster controversy. So
yes.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So if you look at one of the sites that aggregates a lot of polls is this website, Real Clear Politics. And in the last days of the race, you've seen a lot of numbers come in from these groups like Trafalgar or Insider Advantage, Susquehanna, a lot of them that are either partisan pollsters or have partisans as their clients, and they're doing the polls on their behalf. And these have been much rosier for Trump than most of the, you know, august, high quality, you know, NBC News, Wall Street Journal polls or things like that. Now, I want to be very clear. Trump can absolutely win the election. But when you look at under the hood at some of these partisan Republican polls, they show things like Trump winning, you know, 30% of independents in Michigan or 30% of black voters in Michigan, things that just are really kind of in a different universe from a lot of other pollsters. So I think Trump could win. I don't necessarily think that it will look like what Trafalgar or Insider Advantage is showing. If he does, I think if Trump wins, it'll once again be a huge surge of rural voters. So the controversy is just that a lot of pollsters have been questioning some of the methodologies used by some of these Republican pollsters.
And why the obsession with Pennsylvania, do you think? Certainly the candidates spent an inordinate amount of time there in the last few days. The media is obsessing on Pennsylvania. But there are, you know, it's only one of various paths to victory.
Yeah, so if you look at it statistically, Pennsylvania is the one that's the most likely to give either Trump or Joe Biden 270 electoral votes, i.e. it's the most likely tipping point state. So, you know, if we are in a situation where Biden's being underestimated nationally now, then states like Texas and Ohio and Iowa are in play. If we're looking at the polls as being pretty much correct, then the closest states are going to be Georgia, North Carolina, Arizona. If the polls are wrong like they were in 2016 and Trump is being underestimated, then Pennsylvania is kind of Biden's last line of defense to keep an electoral college majority. So that's why you've seen Joe Biden spend more money in that state, you know, relative to the population than any other state, and why he's visited it more than any other state, including going to Scranton today.
You also have your eye on the Senate races. I know you've been watching the Senate races. The Senate could flip to Democrat today. To Democratic majority control, depending on how things turn out today. I'll let you weigh in on one of these, North Carolina, in which you write, "The future of the country comes down to an illicit sex haver."
Yeah. Thank you. So Democrats felt really quite good about their chances in the Senate, where they could pick up Colorado and Arizona seats pretty comfortably. They were in good shape in Maine to pick up Susan Collins' seat. And then the so-called tipping point state that was going to help decide control of the Senate would be North Carolina, where Tom Tillis was running against a challenger, Cal Cunningham. Cunningham had built up a pretty decent lead, but then he was caught having affairs. I mean, we don't actually know how many affairs, but one affair, two affairs. So that's brought that race a lot closer. It does still look like Cunningham has a modest advantage there over Tillis. But what's interesting is you've seen the main Senate race stay really quite close, because Susan Collins, you know, brand for independence is helping keeping her afloat in an otherwise really difficult environment for her. So I think the Senate, control of the Senate, could really be quite a nail biter here. I think that the outlook has probably improved a little bit for Republicans since the nadir of things a few weeks ago.
Last thing for you, Jim. You had a pretty widely shared article around this time in 2016 called, "Of Course You Should Be Panicking About the Election." And that was aimed at Hillary supporters. And of course, as it turned out, if they weren't panicking, then they had their heads in the sand. And you remind us of that this year and say you are still pro-panic. Tongue in cheek?
You know, it's a little bit tongue in cheek. I just think people should... you know, if we compare this race to the Clinton race, Biden's numbers are better. There are not some of the really frightening signs for Democrats that were being ignored popularly in 2016. The generic congressional ballot looks good, whereas it was really closing a lot for Clinton in the last stage of that race. Just if you break down all the numbers, it's hard to see where the disaster could actually strike. That's kind of what I was trying to get at 2016, when there really were some bad numbers for Clinton. I just think that, you know, if you're a Democrat and Donald Trump could be president for another 4 years, it's probably, you know, you should be on high alert for that. And you should, you know, not be resting on your laurels that the race is already won by Biden when there's still a full day of voting left to go.
Jim Newell writes The Surge, political newsletter for Slate. Jim, now you can go back to obsessing over the early tea leaves from Florida, 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 Florida.
Thank you. Very healthy decision by me.
And now to a few calls. We only have a few calls coming in from people who have switched sides in the presidential from 2016 to now. So let's see what we do have. It might just be one caller, actually. If so, I've got a whole other informal, unofficial, thoroughly unscientific election day exit poll question lined up. But Marcy in Pine Beach, New Jersey, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in, Marcy.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Who'd you vote for in 2016, and who are you voting for today?
I voted for Trump in 2016, and after about a year, I regretted that, and I have been embarrassed about how he has conducted himself, and watching the few debates, the two debates with my husband, has been very uncomfortable because he is still a Trump supporter, and it's been a tough go.
What changed you?
First of all, when he pulled out of the
Paris Peace Accord, Paris Climate Accord.
Yes. When he pulled out of that, and as soon as I work in the health, I work in a nursing home, mm-hmm. and as soon as the coronavirus hit, that was when he came out in February with his opinion of what was happening. I was just appalled, and seeing people die on a daily basis. And hearing how he was handling this, and it just was devastating to me, and that did it for me. I did not want to vote for him, and I was surprised that my husband wasn't with me on the switch.
Marcy, thank you very much for your call. I hope there is peace in your family. Marcy, one of those people in New Jersey and in the healthcare field, as she said, who got alienated after voting for Trump by the way he has talked about and dealt with the pandemic. One of many, according to the polls. Don in Rivervale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Don.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Are you
lifelong Republican who dropped out about 6 months into the Trump administration. I could not be affiliated with what I now refer to as the Pusillanimous party, as in pusillanimous. They have been so involved in tying themselves directly to Trump and his every wish that I cannot be affiliated with them anymore.
Don, thank you very much. Jay in Somerset County. It's Dan in Forked River. Interesting. All our vote switchers are in New Jersey today. Dan in Forked River, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Who'd you vote for in 2016? Who are you voting for today?
I voted for a Libertarian out of Texas in 2016 just because it's same old, you hear the same things. The lesser of two evils, I just can't do it. I couldn't do it then. I couldn't do it in the prior election or the one before that, but this one, I really do believe my vote counts, and I had to vote against Trump. I just don't like the man.
What led you to vote Libertarian in 2016? I know you said lesser of two evils, Tweedledee, Tweedledum.
Correct. Well, I'm all about the planet, nature, the environment, having some freedoms, not the way Trump sees them, but the way most normal people would see them, if that's an accurate way to describe it.
And we don't have time to really get into it, but libertarians and environmental protection people are sometimes the opposite, because the libertarians say, let business do what it wants without government regulation, the market will take care of the environment, and of course, environmentalists tend to be the other way.
Well, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I didn't do a whole lot of research into it. I do feel I need to vote, and I did vote for that reason only. But libertarian, I looked into libertarianism, and it's probably the closest thing that aligns with me. But it's even that's not completely aligned.
Right.
If you understand what I'm saying?
I do. So you did that in 2016, but now you just got to get rid of Trump. I hear you. Shuley in New Jersey. Shuley, do I have you?
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who did you vote for in 2016, and who are you voting for today?
So I have been, since I emigrated to this country, I've been voting for a Democratic candidate, never a Republican. I'm a registered Democrat. But I was very upset with the Democratic Party and Hillary's nomination. So I voted for Trump. And I'm voting again for Trump because I don't think Biden is fit to be a president. And I think I don't understand the Kamala Harris pick.
So your switch really came in 2016. It didn't come now. I see. But what did you most, what most turned you off about the Democratic Party?
I thought the that Hillary was just given the position. She was handpicked by the elite of the party. I don't think they encouraged enough of Democratic politicians to run against her. Somehow Bernie got on the ballot. I don't think it was a fair way that they went about it. I think the Clintons were crooked. Though I have to say, if Bill Clinton was running today, I would probably vote for him again.
That's so interesting. Shirley, I'm going to leave it there for time. Go ahead. Did you want to finish your thought there?
No. Go ahead.
Shirley, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. We appreciate your call. And now we'll spend our last couple of minutes on what you're doing tonight instead of or as you're following the returns. Jamie and Glenn Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jamie, real quick.
Hi, Brian. I'm spending the evening because my wife and kid are in Texas. We had a renovation interrupted by COVID. So I am spending the evening creating and building and fixing things, and I hope it's a harbinger of the year to come.
Will you be doing that to kind of get your physical energy out while you're following the returns?
That's entirely right. Otherwise, I'm just pacing. I'm a nervous wreck. I can't take any more of Trump.
I hear you, Jamie. Thank you very much. Laura in Brooklyn. Hi, Laura. You're on WNYC. What are you doing tonight?
Hi, first-time caller, long-time listener. I am making a arduous lasagna. I started my bolognese at 7 a.m., and I'm going to stir the bechamel to distract myself all night.
The intricate lasagna. What's in it?
Yes. This one is a meat lasagna, just a classic tomato sauce, meat, bolognese, bechamel, herbs, cheese, mozzarella. All of it, and we'll probably have some stiff cocktails to go with it.
Stress, carb loading. Laura, thank you very much. Liz and Saugerties here on WNYC. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Brian. First-time caller, long-time listener. I want to visit my family in Brooklyn, but I'm going to be watching the news, I guess, tonight in the past couple of days because I'm not sure what the protests are going to be looking like, and my family lives in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and Bay Ridge hasn't been the most classiest these past couple of months.
When you say looking at what the protests are going to be, you mean you're kind of getting ready to go out if you feel like your physical presence is needed?
No, what I mean by that is I just want to spend time with my family, and I have to take the bus or the train, so I'm kind of worried about going into, 42nd Street or Penn Station and, just what that might look like election night.
Liz, thank you very much. Jared in Montclair, I think, is going to get our last word. Hi, Jared. We got about 30 seconds for you.
Hey, Brian. Appreciate you. Appreciate the show. I made a friend over the course of this pandemic. We really became close in these last several months, and we're going to stick together and watch the show this evening with some fun food and snacks.
You have a network picked out, or are you going to graze and like see what Fox is doing, see what MSNBC is doing, that kind of thing?
Grazing is on the agenda for sure.
Grazing is on the agenda for Jared in Montclair and his new friend. Thanks to all of you for your calls. Good luck getting through tonight. Whatever you do, who knows what will be on the other side. Tomorrow morning, we will talk about it here. I'll also be back at 7 o'clock tonight to anchor our first hour of coverage. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.